Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Come on, jump up! Sakatumi Santa, you know what I like. Sakatumi Santa, just bring me a bag. Christmas just won't be a drag. Santa's got a brand new bag.
So Dave Klein, you live in the area in Fenton where we both live very close to one another. I have a tornado siren that is essentially in my backyard. So I don't know how close they are to you, but this thing's going off on Friday night. The dogs are going crazy. We went into the basement twice with Alexa because I'm thinking, well, I'm watching, you know, the coverage and it seemed pretty serious. But then you're like, oh, okay, is the tornado way over there? Can it get here? We seem to be on the edge of it a little bit. And then, remember, I sent you a text, and I'm just going to be honest about something, because when I saw them describing how wide this potential tornado, and I'm talking about the one here, not in Kentucky, could be, I thought, I've never seen anything like that. So I sent Dave a text that said, hey, congratulations, we've survived the widest tornado in history. And I was somewhat joking, right? Well, come to find out what happened not only here but in Kentucky. I brought Dave Murray into the fold here this afternoon to talk about all this. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great.
So let's just go to the notion that I guess the one in Kentucky was on the ground for, I've heard a couple of things, 128 miles, maybe 200 miles. How is that even possible? That just sounds crazy.
It doesn't happen very often. And I think, you know, those numbers on the Kentucky one, there appears there might have been two of them, almost running parallel to each other, separated by 50 miles. And it takes so long to do these surveys, especially in a track like this. I'm not sure we're going to know the exact distance here for a while. And everything I've seen, it looks like they hit, they kind of pull back up, they come back down, they pull. But it's all part of the same supercell. And, you know, that's obviously what we call a long-track tornado. The one in Defiance was a long-track tornado. That was 21 miles. The one that hit Edwardsville was 3.6 miles. That's, you know, when it comes to St. Louis tornadoes, the big ones, I would say that's probably about average. But most tornadoes, you know, we have typically small tornadoes on the average. You know, they're on the ground for maybe a minute or two, and then they're gone. And that's what makes the warning so difficult. These were actually fairly easy to warn. The one down in Kentucky that hit Mayfield, that was extremely easy to warn. In fact, the warnings were out 45 minutes to 60 minutes before that thing hit any particular town, including Mayfield. And I think part of the problem that happened, why the death toll is so high, is that it happened at night, it happened in December, and it happened on a Friday night. Now, yes, there were some factories, warehouses, you know, in full tilt because of the holidays. But I think a lot of people just, you know, put their phones down, don't turn the TV on, don't turn the radio on, maybe don't have the weather radio in the room they're doing. And whatever activities they may be out. And it just shows that you really need to be, when thunderstorms are in the forecast, and these were in the forecast for a couple of days, you really need to pay attention to the weather. Don't think because it's December it can't happen. It does happen.
And Dave, I told Mark that I made the stupid decision on Friday night to drive out to my in-laws' farm in Herman, Missouri. So what I didn't realize at the time was my wife and I were kind of driving right into the middle of a pretty big storm in Washington, Missouri. So bad to the point where we got out on Highway 100 and actually had to pull over for a good 10 or 15 minutes because hail was hitting our car so much we were afraid to drive in it.
Oh, yeah. These were very strong storms. In fact, there's a couple of things to really consider. You know, to consider a tornado, obviously, especially the small ones, but if you have an uptick in lightning and you're seeing hail produce, you're in the heart of that particular thunderstorm.
Yeah, and I saw lightning like every, and I'm not kidding you, every second and a half. Didn't see any rain at all. It was really freaky.
That's
just
gotta freak you out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and remember, most of the time, tornadoes happen before the rain hits. They form out in front of the main part of the rain shaft of any particular thunderstorm. So it does not. Now, we do get rain-wrapped tornadoes in the St. Louis area, but most of the time, they hit first. And then the rain from the storm comes in right behind it.
But I want to go back to what I said at the beginning, because I think there's lessons here. I'm, you know, in bed. The siren goes off. My daughter's sleeping. My wife and I are like, well, I guess we should go in the basement. And we did. We went in the basement twice because I thought, man, if the sirens are going off and I'm watching the corner. But human nature is to sometimes say, okay, really, do I need to go in the basement? Then you start hearing about what happened. And, you know, I see some complaints about how Amazon workers weren't supposed to have their phones in there. That shouldn't really matter, because there should be some warning signal whether you have your phone with you or not. Although I will say that my phone went off. That was the first thing that alerted me the other night. So that does help when the phones start blasting off. If you're watching a movie or something, Dave, then you tune into what's happening with the weather, right?
Right. Right, exactly. And, you know, in the case of every company, I don't care how big or how small, should have a safe place to go, and every employee should know where that safe place is. And especially like on a warehouse-type situation, these companies need to have weather warnings in place where alarms go off. And so the people inside those buildings can go to their safe place, because you're in a warehouse, that's not a safe place, as we've seen.
I agree with you, but here's the question. Do they? Do warehouses have warning systems or safe places like that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that's a great question. You know, I can go back and after the Good Friday tornado, which hit very close to Fox 2 when I was working there, which was a wild evening, we had meetings the next couple of days of, okay, where do we go? Because Fox 2 is basically in a warehouse, big, tall ceilings. It's wide. That's where the studios are. And we developed a safe place routine that was communicated to all people. And in fact, I remember in some tornado events saying on the air, anybody who's listening at Fox 2, and I know they're listening, especially in the newsroom, it's time to go to your safe place
right
now.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, does every company have it? No. I think that's one of the big lessons out of this, is that, you know, let's not come up with maybe a plan and then shelve it and not worry about it until the next storm. Because it's winter, it's the holidays, we can forget about it. Everybody really needs to have a plan, including a household. You need to know, don't lie in bed like you might have been doing and say, gee, I wonder if we should go to the base. I wonder if we, you know, St. Louisans have a great habit of when the sirens go off, they run out to the front door and see what's going on.
That was the first thing I did. Okay, yeah. I'm just going to tell you, that was the first thing I did. I opened up the front door. I'm like, what, doesn't seem so bad out here?
Right. What happens in the case of tornado warnings in the St. Louis area, and it's always been goofy to me, it's goofy to a lot of people, is let's say you live in St. Louis County, and there is a tornado warning for St. Charles County. The sirens will go off in St. Louis County based on that warning. Now, you could make a case, okay, well, that storm is moving towards St. Louis County. It might be the warning for Madison County in Illinois, and those storms are moving to the east. St. Louis County and city will put the sirens on. Almost after the fact, that storm's probably passed. Not in every case, but they have probably passed. It could be down in Jefferson County, and the St. Louis sirens will go on. And that's a problem, and it's a problem of crying wolf that also comes about that, because the same, you know, exactly. You might say, okay, hey, the sirens are on. You go outside and you go, I don't see anything.
Right.
I see some clouds. I don't see any lightning. I don't hear any thunder. I don't see anything. And that's why it is so important. I've always used the rule of thumb. If you get that uh-oh feeling, really about anything, but when it comes to thunderstorms and you don't feel good about it, your house is rocking or whatever, get down in the basement, get to your safe place, interior floor, bathroom, whatever the case may be. Don't wait for the sirens. Don't wait for the warning to come out and just ride it up. Most of the time, the storms are 15, 20 minutes and they're gone. And, you know, 15, 20 minutes of you might consider a waste of time really isn't a waste of time.
No, I think we definitely know that after the visuals. You know, I talked about this a little bit this afternoon earlier. We'll touch on it as we close here in this hour, too. But one of our good friends, Scott Jennings, who is a regular political correspondent, used to work for President Bush and the majority leader, well, now the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, but he's down in Kentucky. His house that he grew up in, his dad's house, gone. Three people on that block, dead. And he says that the devastation, you can't even put it into words.
No, you can't. You know, if you've never seen tornado damage, and we've seen plenty of it in St. Louis. You know, the Good Friday tornado is a great example, really close to home, hit the airport, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you see it on the news, but unless you are part of that damage, you cannot imagine. One of the most amazing sights to me was the Amazon warehouse in Edwardsville.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing, but when you see an aerial of it and you see the right, depending on how you look at the warehouse, the right-hand part of that factory, warehouse, whatever you want to call it, is gone. The rest of it is standing. So you get an idea of what these things can do. They have a variety of width. They have a variety of intensity. And, you know, these kind of storms that formed on Friday evening, just don't fool around with them. Even if you think, it's December, it's never going to happen. It happens. It happens.
Yeah, Dave, you know, you mentioned a little bit ago to have a plan. I think that's really important. My wife and I and the kids know what to do at home. But as I said, we were out at a farmhouse on Friday night in Herman, Missouri. No basement, no storm shelter. So what's your advice for someone like me in that situation? Is the best thing to find like an interior closet to go to?
Yeah, the closer you can get to the center of the house, lowest possible floor you can get to. It's always been believed and still is that a bathroom is the strongest part of the house, mainly because of the piping that goes through it. You know, it's kind of anchored to the foundation, and that's a great place. You also need to have plans if you get separated from your family. Let's say Friday night, you were at the farmhouse, your kids were at a party or a sleepover or whatever else is going on. You guys really need a plan of how do we get together? How do we communicate? Because a lot of times the cell phones are going down. You know, towers maybe get hit. You're not going to have communication. You need a way to make sure you have a location that the family meets at so that you all get together. I know it sounds like a lot of work. And it is, you know, safety is a lot of work and instill it. And every spring go over the plan again.
I mean, if you're not motivated by what you saw this past weekend, I don't know what would motivate you, Dave. And that's important for sure. Dave Murray, KFTK, chief meteorologist. Thanks for weighing in here this afternoon. And I hope we keep getting better news here on some of the, you know, the aftermath. But I appreciate it, Dave. Thank you.
You got it. Anytime, guys.
Well, I mentioned that one of our contributors here, my friend Scott Jennings, is in Kentucky, and his dad's house is gone, just complete devastation. Closer to home here, we've been obviously talking about Edwardsville. St. Charles County Executive Steve Elman is with me this afternoon because obviously Defiance got hit as well. How are you, Steve, this afternoon? More importantly, how is everyone out there? Well, I think we might have dropped him, Dave. I'm not sure what happened there. Hold on. I think the phone line, I'm just going to hope this is Steve. Steve, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Ah, there you go. We got cut off. All right. My question to you was, how what can you tell us about what happened in Defiance and how you're seeing images from across the country, obviously Kentucky and Edwardsville. How did St. Charles County come out of this?
Well, we lost one resident, which is a tragedy. But compared to Kentucky and even to Edwardsville, Illinois, we were very, very lucky. The touchdown was out around the Boone home on Highway F. and proceeded down Highway F to 94, and then went down the hill into the floodplain and followed the Missouri River down towards Chesterfield and crossed back over into St. Charles. But it was basically went through the floodplain. So except for that area out around Highway F, we were very lucky. And the people in Highway F, you know, it's just very very impressive to see the damage that was done. Mark, there's one house out there. I don't know if you've seen the picture, but I pointed to it the other day with some journalists. I said, show your viewers this picture. It was a house, and all was left was the basement. Yeah. I said, that's why everybody tells you when the sirens go off, get in the basement, because in that case, the basement was the only thing that was left. The top of the rest of the house blew away. It blew a couple hundred yards, crossed a creek, and it was amazing what a tornado can do.
You know what's interesting is that you describing the path of that tornado is exactly, because this technology is stunning. It really is. And the meteorologists were walking through the specifics of where that wind and tornado was, and it's exactly what they said Friday night, what you ran through.
Yep. Yeah, and you know it crossed from Chesterfield back into onto the St. Charles County side of the river, was headed down the river, was headed straight for our family arena where Lindenwood University had 3,000 people for a graduation ceremony. Goodness. And before it got there, it dissipated.
Thank God.
It dissipated.
For that.
At the family arena, everybody took shelter, you know, under the stands and all that sort of stuff. But given what happened over in Illinois, we were just very lucky that it didn't continue on that same route and keep its same strength.
So as far as damage and anything that is required, I mean, is it something where there's going to be a disaster declaration in Missouri or not to that level?
Well, I signed a disaster declaration about 20 minutes ago for St. Charles County. The state is a question mark. There has to be a $10 million worth of damages in Missouri before the federal government will declare it a disaster area. So we're kind of, we're in a situation here where we're very, very pleased we don't have more damage. But because we don't have more damage, we may need to go ahead and pay for this ourselves.
Yeah, so what does that mean? Is there, if it's not a FEMA disaster, a federal disaster area, then that limits the resources from where you can repair things, right?
Well, and we'll continue to maybe find different sources, there's a lot of people, especially in that part of our county, don't really demand a whole lot from government. In fact, a lot of them, were out there cleaning up before our people could even get there. So they don't ask for a lot. So when something like this happens, we're going to do everything we can to make sure government responds to their needs. And we've had our Saturday and Sunday, our building department was out there and did 238 inspections, because the last thing we wanted was additional injuries because somebody went into a home that wasn't safe. And there are 30 homes that are unsafe. 16 of them are total loss. 13 of them are major damage, which will have to be repaired. And we're doing everything we can to help those people. We're going to set up, next Tuesday, appliances. We're going to be out, and anybody has an appliance, they put it at the curb, and we'll pick it up and take that away.
Awesome.
The next day, we're meeting with a company, and we did this during the last tornado. We're meeting with a company that will go ahead and go around and pick up household debris and vegetation and take that to a landfill if it's debris, and take it to a place where we'll chop it up, probably out at the Boone home, at the Lindenwood Park at the Boone home, and we'll chop that up and use it for mulch. But in the meantime, again, I know the Red Cross, they're out there. And they're doing everything they can to help those in need.
Well, Steve, keep us posted if we can help later in the week. I just want to kind of get you on here to talk about some of what happened in St. Charles County, and it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
We're certainly seeing that. These images from Kentucky are just, and Edwardsville, are just stunning. But thank you for the time this afternoon.
Yeah, Mark, I was real interested in your previous conversation.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, this whole thing with the sirens and everything, it's kind of like the mask, okay? You can have a mask mandate or you could have a take shelter mandate, but there's no way to enforce it. So we've got to educate people on the benefits of going to that shelter. And I thank you for doing that today.
Yeah, I mean, even personally, I had a bit of a wake-up call. We did the right thing. We went into the basement, but I think it was certainly an exclamation point after seeing the damages. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. 526, inflation. Is it coming at us from a couple of different perspectives? David Rose, he's a professor of economics at UMSL, will join us next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Watching these videos, I don't know if you've seen any. We just had some come across in the studio of the migrants, we call them migrants, the illegal immigrants that are crossing the border. Why wouldn't you do that? I mean, it's basically you get free health care.
Free
health care,
you can vote,
you can
drive.
Vote, we can pay you money, you can drive. I mean, why stay in Honduras or someplace like that when we have open borders? We also have a lot of inflation. Maybe this is one reason. We got inflation running rampant in this country. David Rose is with me this afternoon, a longtime Reardon Show friend. He is a professor of economics at UMSL, and he shared some thoughts with me last week about inflation, which kind of does, not your thoughts, David, but the whole concept of what's going on, because I think people really are feeling inflation, is kind of scaring the hell out of me. How are you, first and foremost?
I am quite well. It's good to hear your voice, Mark.
You know, we go back a long way, and we've had conversations on the radio about inflation. And one of the things that I've been saying with other guests in the past is that that concept of inflation has always been more of a concept. I mean, certainly I understand what it is, and I was around in the late 1970s, but I don't think we've ever felt, at least in my lifetime as an adult, so that would be post, you know, 1985, felt inflation sting this much. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think the reason why you haven't is also the reason why it's likely to get much worse soon.
Well, that's not what I want to hear, but you told me in an email last week that you had some theories about inflation and that maybe there's more than this, I'd never heard this before, but maybe more than one form of inflation, right, that's going on at the same time?
Absolutely. You know, what I think is going on here, what I think is the more important story than the COVID supply disruption story and so on and so forth, is that we're in the midst of a demographic change, and that is going to show the relevance of the fact that there's two different types of inflation. The Consumer Price Index measures things that we consume, the kinds of things that we use and then have to replace in less than a year. We all know what those things are. But people also buy things that they own for long periods of time, assets, and the most important assets, of course, are things like their homes, their cars, stocks, and bonds. Well, when you print a lot of money, one way that money can show up in the economy is show up in the prices of those assets. It doesn't just have to show up in the prices of food and energy and other types of consumer goods and services that we normally consume.
So when you say that right now, obviously the housing market has been crazy, and we all know that we benefit if you own a home, you benefited from that, but then you have to pay more for gas, you have to pay more for food. Many of us, and I'm very lucky, I can absorb these costs. It's not fun, but I'm not looking at the gas pump and saying, good Lord, how am I going to pay my bills? But a lot of people are, because you add 25, 30, 50 bucks a week to the cost of gasoline or energy prices, and that's going to hurt people.
It is, and I think it's going to get worse. And the reason why is because the next year will be the year when we tip over to having more than 50% of the boomers 65 or older. And to put some perspective on that, just last year about 3 million boomers retired. The year before that it was only 2 million. So that's a very rapid escalation in boomers retiring. Now, why does that matter? Well, when you're saving for retirement, you put most of your income into buying assets. That's what you're doing, and when you do that, you buy more real estate, you buy more stocks, you buy more bonds. So when economists say that we haven't been experiencing high inflation despite rapid money growth, I think that's basically nonsense. Rapid money growth has been fueling inflation for a long time. It's just been manifesting itself through real estate, stocks, and bond prices. Give you a quick and dirty statistics to that effect. Over the course of the 18 months ending August 2021, the money supply grew by an astounding 35.7%. It should be growing at about 3% a year. The CPI didn't rise nearly that fast, right? We all know that. But the Case-Shiller Real Estate Home Index went from 3% year-over-year increase in 2019 to 7% in 2020 to 21% for 2021. So if you're wondering where that 35% increase in money went, that's a big part of it. And of course, we all know about the stock market rallying. Same kind of thing. We now have price-to-earnings ratios that are a pretty good measure of impending bubbles. That's about double what it should be normally. So the Fed's printing money, and the boomers are saving as much of it as they can, and that explains why the stock market and real estate markets have been doing so well, even though the world economy is stumbling so badly.
All right, but you think there are some bad things lurking around the corner, even worse than maybe some economists are predicting, right?
I think that we're only just now beginning to see the CPI reflect the effects of rapid money growth because of it's only just now starting to affect the things we consume rather than things we own. But that's starting to change, and it's going to get worse in the years to come. And remember, with younger people and with older people who are already retired, increases in the money supply aren't going to result in increases in asset prices. They're going to result in increases in the prices of consumer goods and services. So I think we're in the midst of an inflation in asset markets that's starting to shift over to an inflation of the goods and services market as more and more boomers retire.
So is this what you would refer to, and I've heard this term and I've talked about it with some guests, are we in hyperinflation or not?
No, we're not in hyperinflation, and I wouldn't be surprised if inflation went down in the near term as COVID supply disruptions get sorted out. But I think that'll be something that should be recognized as a pause. I think there's just no getting around the fact that a society that has a very, very high proportion of older people who aren't working relative to younger people who are, that society's just not going to be able to produce the kind of quality of life for the older people that they expected they would have when they were like in their mid-50s, thinking they could just keep doing that forever. That's just not feasible. We don't have enough young people to make enough stuff for the old people. How do you fix that? Well, one way you fix that is you reduce the purchasing power of what the young people are earning through inflation. I mean, it's not, you don't intend to do that, but it's just like an inevitable means.
Hey, I had another child at age 50. Doesn't that help a little bit with, the worker shortage? But on a serious note, David, this is when I talk to you that this is what gets me very depressed moving forward, because there doesn't sound like a lot of positivity moving forward with this particular issue, and that's going to have an effect on the rest of the economy.
It doesn't, but there are other things going on. There are ways that people can help hedge themselves against this, and I think that the countries in Europe dealt with these kinds of problems with immigration. We've had an awful lot of uncontrolled immigration. I'm not for uncontrolled immigration. I think that's a bad idea. What we're doing down on the border is a bad idea. But on the other hand, if we had immigration in the form of, properly vetted people who were young and ready to work, that does help deal with that demographic problem. So that, things do change. Whenever things are highly out of balance, it's a mistake to just assume that things will proceed on in that imbalance. People do respond, and things are not always as bad as they may first appear. So I know I sound gloom and doom, but my point simply is that this idea that inflation's transitory, you know, which the Fed is trying to suggest, although they backed off of that 2 weeks ago, but it's not. It's here, and it'll probably get worse before it gets better, and we're talking about several years.
So do you expect a couple things here moving forward? You expect the interest rates, because this is the expectation, to rise. We're assuming that there's going to be another $1 trillion or whatever spent from Washington. But I guess the overall question that I would have is there anything that we can do about it? You know, because we're doing exactly the opposite when it comes to maybe keeping inflation in check. We're printing a bunch of money. That's the opposite of what we should do, right?
That is right. We need to stop doing that. But like I said, the Fed has really painted itself into a bad spot, because if it doesn't pull back, we're going to have runaway inflation. If it does, we're going to have a rapid increase in interest rates. And it's going to be much more than it would have been a couple years ago. A couple years ago, you had a very large percentage of the baby boomers throwing a ton of money at the credit markets, which made it very, very difficult to even cause inflation when you wanted to. People forget that just 3 years ago, the Fed was worried about not being able to get inflation going. They wanted some additional inflation for the purposes of monetary policy.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing, but it's not surprising. It was deemed some kind of huge puzzle by a lot of economists, and that made no sense to me. When you have a very, very large number of people throwing a ton of money at the credit market, it's going to cause very low interest rates, and it's going to make it very difficult for the money to actually work its way into consumer demand, because they aren't interested in spending it yet. That's what was going on. But it's a mistake to think that those rules still exist now. Now you're on the backside of this boomer thing. We're in a situation where they are not going to be big savers. They're not going to be spending. So if you pull back on money now, you're going to see interest rates go up. And when that happens, you're going to see a stampede out of the stock market, because an awful lot of boomers are way overexposed to risk right now, and they know it. They don't want that much money in the stock market. They want more of it in bonds. They want more of it in CDs.
Yeah, but it's hard to pull out right now, right? To your point, I think that's what's happening.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a second, this ride is still going, so but it's going to come to an end. Just quickly, because I only have like a minute and a half left, I know this all interconnects with the labor market and the labor shortage, but what I hear is that that labor shortage situations, that's not going to improve either, is it?
That is a much harder thing to determine, because it's a situation where in order to make the economic prediction, you have to make the background political prediction about what's going to happen. Political policies, and of course we know what's happened with COVID. We had all kinds of intervention in the labor market, you know, paying people to not work and so on and so forth. And those kinds of things, how they're unwound is not something that an economist has any particular idea about how they're going to do it. I mean, you can guess, but it really is just a guess. I think the labor shortage problem is real. I think it's not only is it a problem in the United States, it's actually a huge problem in China. So at the very least, the Chinese are suffering from the same kind of things that we are. So it's not like we're going to have economic problems and they're going to be doing better. We're going to be doing worse.
I didn't realize that. That's interesting that they have some of the same issues there. Look, I'm out of time. David Rose, UMSL economics professor. We'll have you back. Thanks for reaching out last week, David. I appreciate it.
Terrific. Thank you.
I wish we had better news, but it is what it is. Now the jingle hopper has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell will rock. Merry Christmas, I don't want to find. And we call our airport here in St. Louis Lambert International, don't we? Although
they did.
Sort of changed the name of it years ago, didn't they?
Well, it's now too. It's still St. Louis Lambert. Oh, you're right.
What is it?
St. Louis Lambert International Airport.
Right, but then it was. They changed the whole configuration of that. But anyway, it's comical because we call it an international airport, and you really can't go internationally, although maybe you can.
That's right. Tomorrow, we're having a press conference. We aren't, but there will be a press conference at Market Zoo. We'll announce tomorrow. For the first time in 20 years, St. Louisans will be able to actually fly from St. Louis directly to continental Europe.
I would say that's a pretty big deal.
And the Post is guessing that it is a big deal, that it will be Frankfurt, Germany,
okay,
where we fly. But stay tuned tomorrow.
Baby steps, but that would be good.
That'd be great.
Last time I took a group of listeners to Italy, we had to go. Now, I don't know if you can go through Frankfurt to do this anyway, but you can go to Chicago, and then you got to go to New York. You know, there's no real easy way, so this would be good. Well, I look forward to the announcement. We'll do something on that tomorrow, maybe. Let's do this right now.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, it's sponsored by The Sound Room, and you can check out the 100-inch Sony TV right next to Amini's in the Chesterfield Valley. Scott Jennings is a good friend of mine. Those of you listening to the show have known Scott for many years. He's on CNN from time to time trying to keep people safe. He worked for George W. Bush, and I'm so dumb. I texted him this morning not even thinking because I didn't follow what happened personally to him over the weekend, even though I know he's in Kentucky. So I didn't tell you this, Sue. I reach out today about something completely different. And then I found out from our friend, our mutual friend Joe Arnold, that Scott's dad's house is gone. So I said, oh my God, dude. And he said, you've never seen anything like this. This was a home in an area in Kentucky. You're seeing some of the video, the same thing that happened to Scott and his dad. Here's his dad talking about it.
After the tornado came through, I did get in my vehicle and try to go across town. And I could tell just by what little I could see that night that it was going to be bad. But, you know, you see these things on TV where these big supercell storms come through. But until you see it in person, you can't realize the magnitude of the destruction. It's heartbreaking.
That is Jeff Jennings, Scott's father.
I am a weather watcher. I watch weather every day. I like to know what's going on around me. And I had followed the newscast on this storm for about two hours or so. And I was actually on the phone with a friend of mine across town. And when I realized the magnitude of this storm and that it was bearing down on Princeton, Kentucky, and then us, I actually went across town and got in the basement with them. So I wasn't in my home when the storm hit.
So he did the right thing.
Man.
He got out. He didn't have a basement. Jennings said that earlier, and then they went back to see the house.
Well, it was very emotional for all of us because all that we were really able to recover were just some old family photos and things. His wife passed away a couple of years ago, and there were some of her things from her life that he wanted to recover. She had a book collection that he's held on to, for instance, and that was basically intact, and some paintings that she loved. And so we were able to get some of that stuff out. But at one point, we were picking through the rubble and the glass, and I just said, you know, at some point, it's just stuff. Yeah. And we have to decide here how much further you want to go, because there really was virtually nothing beyond just a few mementos that was salvageable.
It is just stuff. And that's important, but you have victims in Defiance, Edwardsville, and the Amazon plant, and this terrible devastation all across hundreds of miles in Kentucky. You just shake your head at some of this devastation.
Well, and there are still people missing.
I know. This death toll in Kentucky is going to go over 100, unfortunately. Have a great night if you can. Stay safe out there. We'll talk tomorrow afternoon. Go to 97.1 FM Talk to donate to Cardinal Glennon.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.